You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and on the line is Seth Cox. Kind of a cooperative effort of Maturin SB Nation NFL Draft Breakdown. As Seth runs the and hosts the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast, and I run SB Nation's RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the best Arizona Cardinals site for that's by fans for fans, with a touch of perspective from the media, as I do have some inside access myself. But tonight's show, by the way, Seth, how are you doing tonight? As we are just it's recording on Tuesday night, 2 days away from the draft. 2 days.
Yeah, we're almost there. This time Thursday, we'll have either Seth will no longer be working for Revenge of the Birds because the Cardinals will have drafted Jihad Ward at 29.
Oh, gosh.
Or, you know, I'll have a nice write-up on whoever they pick at 29 sent to you via the I think it's the L. I don't know. I think it's called the L train in Chicago as I ride back to my hotel for the evening from the draft.
And my only, you know, as a working media member, is I'll be at the Cardinals facility for draft coverage. You'll be in the draft. You'll be at the draft. You'll be having fun. Apparently, periscoping. If you're into periscope type things. Seth will be periscoping at some point during the first round of the draft. I will be at the Cardinals facility with all the other media members. Personally, as a fan, there's kind of the hope of maybe a trade back. I really hope for my time's sake that they do not trade back and out of the first round, because that would mean spent the entire evening at the Cardinals facility for no pick at all. I don't know. But tonight's show, we're going to focus on, one kind of big topic that sort of popped up on Tuesday on the internet via Bleacher Report's Matt Miller, and it's been shared by a whole bunch of stuff. And then we're going to get into our mock draft. This is our mock draft. So Seth and I put together... So this is one of those cases we actually know what we've talked about some of this ahead of time. So we mocked the first round. We're going to do each of us is going to share the picks that we will project for each team, as well as talk a little bit about what players probably the teams should pick. There might be a couple off the wall picks. I know on my behalf, there's at least one or two picks that I think could happen. I might be a little bit out there, but let's talk about first this rumor of Michael Floyd on the trading block. So Matt Miller, Bleacher Report, has a couple of actually. This is a source is one of a, it's an anonymous scout and another team source. He did not come out and say exactly that Michael Floyd is in fact on the trading block, but rather that these sources said they would not be surprised if the Cardinals used Floyd as trade bait to either gain a pick or move up in the draft. Seth, what's your take on the whole situation?
I think it's just the obvious, like they don't have really any assets, and Floyd's the only tradable asset that they're willing to give up. You know, he's on his last year of a deal. He's probably going to get somewhere in the range of $9 to $14 million a year, depending on the year he has in 2016. So it's one of those, okay, if we can, if we see a guy fall, let's, you know, let's use a, somebody falls into the top of round two that they like. I can't even think of a name off the top of my head right now. Maybe Robert Kimdiche. Maybe Kimdiche goes, you know, falls to about 35, 36, and you call up a team like Dallas, who probably needs a little help across from Dez Bryant and is close, and you say, we'll give you Michael Floyd and our third-round pick for, you know, the rights to 36. Or I don't know what pick they have, but, you know, one of those top five picks in the second round, so they can get a player they want. I think that's really their only bargaining chip, though, unless they want to dip into 2017. And let's be completely honest, they probably don't want to be dipping into 2017 or 18 with the reality of Carson Palmer as their quarterback. Not because Carson Palmer's bad, but because Carson Palmer has a history of injuries. And he's not injury prone, so to speak, as much as he has a history of injuries. So, you know, is that really the best thing to do? Is maybe auction off your 2017 and 2018 assets? And when, you know, God forbid, Palmer goes down again in 2016, the Cardinals end up with a top 10 pick for probably the only time in the Keim era. And all of a sudden that top 10 pick belongs to, you know, a Cleveland that you traded up with in the second round. It doesn't make sense to me.
Oh, especially when you look at the way the roster is currently configured, because they have so few players committed to even 2017. It's almost baffling to look at the number of players who will be, as of right now, free agents after this upcoming season. And even Palmer's contract, you could shed it with some, you know, should he decide to retire. It's not the end of the world salary cap wise if he decides to retire. You know, the receivers, you've only got John Brown and J.J. Nelson under contract. It's sort of like, you know, they don't have much in the way in the cupboard. It's like they're waiting to see what happens. And I think that's kind of, we talked about this offseason. The Cardinals are in, we're all in for 2016. Let's see what happens before we gear up again for 2017, or is 2017 reload and rebuild?
Yeah, and that's kind of interesting. So you want to, you know, like you said, you want to give this team a shot and then reload and rebuild. But they're very thin at a lot of positions. So, you know, I wrote about this on Monday, talking about what is their philosophy going to be, because they have some interesting depth, but I don't know how much good depth they have, you know, especially like along the defensive line. They have Rodney Gunter, who we both really like. And from there, you look at it and go, okay.
Ed Stinson, Josh Morrow, nice. Yeah. Okay.
Those are guys that, you know, those are guys that you that are battling for a roster spot. Those aren't guys that you're locking down the future with, you know, kind of like you said.
Right.
And in the same vein, the wide receiver position, they only have two people under contract for 2017. So there's an interesting idea that they can make a move and, you know, strengthen a strength, but strengthen it in terms of 2017 and beyond, as opposed to maybe immediate impact in 2016.
Now, for me, I wrote on RevengeOfTheBirds.com this evening, Tuesday evening, about the whole Floyd rumor. There are a number of things that work in favor and against that kind of lead to say, okay, it's definitely a possibility. One, this isn't the first time. I mean, there were whispers about Floyd being shopped last year, for whatever reason. It seems the actions the team have taken almost feel like they don't love him. They're not completely sold on him. At the same time, Michael Floyd himself says the coaching staff loves him. And in terms of the type of player he is, he offers something that no other player on the team offers in that receiving corps, because he's got great length, and he's got top end speed, and he's got great jumping ability and ball skills, something that you don't get from the other players on the roster. Sort of a thing that, well, Bruce Arians hasn't always had, and so he is an interesting piece to that offense. Now, if you look at the Cardinals' philosophy, Steve Keim has said many times, you don't let your best players get to free agency. Floyd is in the last year of his deal, and there hasn't been even a sniff so far of negotiations. So what does that tell you? It doesn't seem like Michael Floyd might be in their long-term plans. Maybe they're waiting until to open those talks during the season. But as of right now, they're not committed to him. But on the other side, they're trying to go all in this year. And he was an integral part of that offense that set so many records, so many team records. You can't really expect granted, at the beginning of the season when they were getting good production as well, he was basically non-existent. But nonetheless, you'd find it hard-pressed thinking logically as a fan that getting rid of Michael Floyd makes sense unless they had a plan in place, that there was a target in the draft that they said, okay, here's our big 50-50 guy that can run down the field and catch deep balls.
No, they usually rely on speed for that. So, you know, as opposed to, like you said, the 50-50 player. I think they've also learned that with Palmer, having a person that can win jump balls is more important than a guy that can win with speed. Because, you know, we've seen it quite a bit. There's quite a few throws a year where Palmer just doesn't get enough on a ball, so a wide receiver has to wait, and you know they make a nice catch and get tackled, or the opposite where he's got to put everything into it and he can't connect, and so they don't score. And so, you know, having Floyd, you know, that was been my biggest criticism of Floyd the player, was that he lacked the ability after the catch, where you saw that a little more this year in certain games. And so in reality, I'm not ever a fan of paying wide receivers. Like $8 million a year is basically where I would go.
And that's number two money anymore.
Yeah. And if, you know, a guy wants more than that, good luck, like go get it elsewhere. Because I think every wide receiver in this league outside of maybe five is a replaceable commodity on the field. I mean, you know, you can't replace Antonio Brown. You probably can't replace Dez Bryant. But, I mean, you look at what the Seattle Seahawks have done. You look at what the New England Patriots have done. I mean, they're able to build a wide receiver core through, you know, nickel and diming things and good quarterback play. And the Cardinals, meanwhile, have invested quite a bit into their receiving core. I mean, two first-round picks, a third-round pick. And then a fifth round pick, you just look at it and, you know, then you look at it, they have, I think, $19 million between Fitz and Floyd next year. So much space. Money is just, I mean, they're the opposite. They've gone the opposite direction. They've said we need to get as much help for Carson Palmer. And that's not a bad thing either, in this lineup. And so you wonder how long they can do that for. And that's why I've thought, if a guy like Laquan Treadwell fell to 29, which, you know, we'll talk about as we go through our draft, I think he would definitely be an option there, because I think he makes both Fitz and Floyd more expendable in 2017. And you'll never replace Fitz what he is to the franchise, but just from an on-field standpoint, he lessens the blow.
Exactly. Now, in terms of likelihood, how likely? I still think at the end of the day, a trade of Floyd is probably unlikely. And unlike like you, I almost see, well, you said kind of the top of the second round. I could see Floyd being the guy if, for example, I've been all over the Cardale Jones train when it comes to that's the guy I want the Cardinals to draft because of the situation at quarterback now and the potential he has later. Say the Cardinals get wind and they're just completely enamored with Jones, which is a possibility, or maybe not. Say they are, and they kind of read through the tea leaves, hear through their sources that he's going to go late second round. They don't have a second round pick, and I think Floyd becomes You know, if Floyd is traded, it's to get a quarterback, probably. In my opinion, it's probably for a quarterback that they're targeting.
Yeah, maybe it's, you know, maybe we'll talk about it in the draft, but maybe it's a Paxton Lynch, right? Like, maybe Lynch gets to 19 and they know New York is going to make that play. So they go, okay, we'll give you 29 and Floyd. I don't even know who's drafting 19 without looking. But, you know, we'll give you 29 and Floyd, and that entices a team to make that play, because they say, oh, I got to have Paxton Lynch. But like you said, I think the only way he's traded is if there's a player that they can't live without, because they've lost their second for, you know, a player in Chandler Jones that they honestly couldn't live without. So it's got to be a similar situation, in my opinion. You know, you have to value here, and here's what I said to, you know, and I asked this, and I know fans don't like to hear this because they like to think that their favorite players are all worth, you know, 17 first round picks. But, and I text a buddy this, and so, you know, I'll read it verbatim so I don't screw it up. Let me get to it. Hold on. I said, people realize AZ got a Pro Bowl pass rusher for two. What team is going to give up a two for a wide receiver two with one 1,000-yard season? Like, the Cardinals got a premium player, and it cost them a two. Okay, it cost them Jonathan Cooper as well. So,
you know, but we've already talked about that. Yeah, Jonathan Cooper was a throw-in.
Give us your failed player and, you know, and a two for Michael Floyd. Like, you look at it, it's just – it's the cost of business. Floyd doesn't have as much, you know, importance to the NFL in terms of what he does outside of, you know, 10 teams maybe. And the Cardinals are one of them.
And you would need two teams essentially bidding on him. Otherwise, right. Would you think he's probably a third rounder, or is he's prop like, well, you kind of said that it would take Floyd plus a something to move up to that point. And yeah, maybe that's the way they have to go.
Yeah,
Floyd plus the fourth, Floyd plus a third. I don't know. Or say they trade back into round two, and so they pick up the extra third or pick up the extra fourth, and then they use Floyd in the fourth to jump back up higher. I don't know.
No, and I don't think
it's going to happen.
I don't either. I think there's like a 15% chance it happens, and I think it's like you said, a position specific player. Maybe a who knows? Like, maybe a Joey Bosa starts to fall because of the whispers of off the field drug use or just running rampant, you know. And he's all of a sudden he's at 13, and the Cardinals go, "Holy crap!" Like, what is, you know, would Miami be willing to do a one and a three and Michael Floyd, you know, so we can go get Joey Bosa, you know? And again, this is all speculation, but I think that's the type of like player it would take. It would take a Paxton Lynch where the Cardinals are convinced he's the quarterback of the future, or, you know, a Joey Bosa, or, you know, somebody of that caliber falling, for them to say, okay, let's package Floyd with one and our three and go get, you know, player X. And that's just my opinion.
And to me, the way that rumor was worded is important as well, because it wasn't a case where Matt Miller was the source told him, hey, look out for, meaning, hey, this is coming down the pipe. It was, I wouldn't be surprised if. So it's as if, okay, the scenario has come up, and okay, this could happen. Like, I'm not somebody surprised, but I think the way it's worded also is important, because it doesn't come out and say, hey, watch out for this. This might be coming. It's, I wouldn't be surprised if this happens, as in, sure, maybe it'll happen.
Right, and that's all it is. It's like, hey, if they find somebody they like, this is their only asset. You yes. know, this is their only tradable
Come
asset.
Come on, Andre Ellington, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Andre Ellington's worth something.
Yeah, exactly. That's what, honestly, like, as much as I try not to be rude, like, that's what fans do not get. It has, like, there's zero interest from other teams in a guy like Andre Ellington for a premium pick. Like, you might be able to get Andre Ellington for like a conditional sixth round pick in 2017, you know, that goes to like a fourth rounder if he plays X number of snaps. But yeah.
All right. So I think we kind of wrapped up talking about Michael Floyd. Now it's mock draft time. So coming up next on Revenge of the Birds Radio, we're going to start our mock draft. See what you like. Back from Revenge of the Birds Radio. So now we're going to talk mock draft time. Now, we had an interesting, fun little thing happen on the internet on Tuesday, and that's Tony Jefferson put his own mock draft together, which was really kind of fun. Is that something you might check out? I have a write-up on it on revengeofthebirds.com. You can check out Tony Jefferson's Twitter feed. But, you know, there are some interesting things. He has a very viable trade down. Cleveland trades down with the Saints. The Saints go up, get Joey Bosa, and then Cleveland moves back again, picks up more picks, and gets, you know, Paxton Lynch, I think, in number 12. He picks the Cardinals to select T.J. Green, a guy who is raw and athletic, but potentially could replace Tony Jefferson, which makes it a little bit fun there. Did you see Tony's? Did you see Tony's rough mock and what you think of it?
I think he was throwing shade at the Cardinals first off. Like, like I think that was that. And hey, you know, he has every right to be upset. Like, I know he's you know, moved past it, signed his Tinder and everything. Like, he's a Cardinal again, but he has every right to be upset. Let's be honest. Like, that's you know, and so I think it's funny that he plays along with it so well. And he really, you know, does a good job with that. From there, you know, it's just like everybody else. It's just about having fun and making predictions that 99% are not going to come true.
Absolutely. So let's talk about ours. We've gone through the entire first round. Both of us, we know the picks that we're going to make. That's one of the rare times where we actually share our takes ahead of time. We talk topics, we talk outlines, and then we kind of shoot the breeze on the air, but we actually know which way we're going to go. So we're going to go quickly kind of through each pick, number one, number two, all the way down through pick number 31. And we're going to give the picks that we made, why we made them, and talk about whether they should have been someone else. The top of the draft's really kind of easy. Start off with the St. Louis Rams at the top of the draft. Both Seth and I make the obvious pick other than Jared Goff.
Yeah, and I think we can even throw in the Eagles here and Carson Wentz for both of us. And we both have an opinion on it in the sense that neither one of us necessarily agree with the picks outside of the fact that it's really the only pick they can make after what they gave up for the pick, right? Like they can't draft Laremy Tunsil and Ezekiel Elliott 1 and 2, because even as good as they could possibly be, I think they're both going to be, you know, potential all pro players, you know, then who's still going to hand them the ball and you know, and who are they going to block for?
And so, here's the thing for me with Jared Goff and kind of the thing, and it's the page, Derek Klassen, what's his name, who did the player comps on the quarterbacks. And I was real impressed with how I put those together for what's
the name. Outside of the fact that he was wrong with my boy Carson Wentz.
But yeah. He compares Jared Goff. He makes a very apt comparison to Sam Bradford. Now, if we recall, it was just a year ago that the Rams – traded away Sam Bradford for Nick Foles. Now, there was contract issues that you had to go into that, so there's money issues with that. But to trade away Sam Bradford, go through a year of quarterback hell, and then to trade away everything to trade up to the top draft to get Jared Goff, who could be another Sam Bradford, does that make any sense at all? Goff better be much more than Sam Bradford, right? Now, Sam Bradford had his career derailed in part by his stupid knees. We saw some really, really good stuff from him when he was healthy, but he never could get a rhythm, and he kept changing offensive coordinators. He's a talented kid. I mean, does Goff make sense? And for me, there's also the issue. We've seen historically air raid quarterbacks don't translate well to the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not a Goff person. Like, you know, when I do my rankings and everything I do now, right now, and through 2017, you know, is going to be focused only on the Arizona Cardinals, just because I don't have time to care about other teams. When I do my rankings, I don't even put Goff in there. Like, And that's not a shot at him. My comp is more like Alex Smith type player. So, you know, same vein, just a little healthier. You know, a guy that has some nice accuracy, but I just don't know how much he's going to be able to push the ball down the field in the NFL and you know, really help himself deep. So I'm not a fan of Goff. I just am not. That's just a personal thing, you know. Nothing against.
Would you say that the Rams should take Wentz? That I think that if they're going to go to the top of the draft, take the guy who, in my opinion, has the higher ceiling. Personally.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing. I think Wentz has a higher ceiling and a much lower floor, and I think Goff has a higher floor and a lower ceiling. Like I said, I think his best case scenario is Sam Bradford, where I see a guy in Carson Wentz who's going to be, you know, Blake Bortles eventually. So that's just my opinion.
And so we'll move to number two. We got the Eagles. We both picked Carson Wentz because I think that's the way it's going to be. If you were the Eagles and if we're saying that Rams should take Wentz, if Philly's number two, should they take Goff or should they take someone else? Because I know you are also big on Connor Cook. Would you take Connor Cook that high at number two?
Oh, no. But I wouldn't take Wentz at number two either. Like, that's my whole thing. I was shocked 2 years ago when Blake Bortles went three overall, and I was, like, the Bortles guy. Like, I was the guy that was high on Bortles. Everybody else was like, oh, this guy's, you know, he's going to have to sit and blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I hope the Cardinals draft him at 20. That would be great. And so same thing with Wentz. Like, if he was there at 29, I think he'd be a spectacular fit behind Carson Palmer for 2 years while he learned the speed of the NFL game, you know, got some mop-up duty that Drew Stanton saw last year, got to do some things and work through some things. But at two, that's just so weird to me. And honestly, I don't know what offense St. Louis runs, because I don't think they know what offense they run, to be really honest. But if you're to ask me, like, just what quarterback fit what offense best, Goff would fit what Doug Peterson does in Philadelphia better than anybody else in this draft. And so now, obviously, if Goff is gone, they don't have the choice.
Right. But and Wentz, and if we're flipping the coin here, that Wentz in that run-heavy offense that St. Louis is ideally going to do, doesn't that sort of match what he was doing in North Dakota State?
Yeah, and you know, play action, like you said, run-heavy, like, it doesn't make sense. So, but, yeah, like, whether or not we agree with it, they literally cannot do anything else because of the capital they've given up to get to these picks.
Right. I mean, would you take Joey Bosa after giving up those picks? No. Would you take anyone? Like, that's ridiculous. So let's we don't agree with what they're doing, but that's how it's going to be anyway. It's going to go Goff, Wentz, maybe Wentz, Goff. Let's move on to number three. You have DeForest Buckner. I have Jalen Ramsey. I think in terms of, you know, I like the approach personally. Ramsey's, I think, the better player. If you're looking at what the San Diego needs, I think that Buckner might be a better fit for what they need, because they're just dreadful against the run, and Buckner can help him with that. But in the end, for me, I see what Patrick Peterson has been able to do for the Cardinals defense, and just what that flexibility and that, you know, that elite cover talent can do, and that can change a defense. So as I say, they should go Ramsey there. Why do you think they're going to go Buckner?
Because of what you said, I think that the hole is bigger on the defensive line than it is at the secondary position. And to be honest, I think both players make sense there, and I'm more of a fan of Ramsey there. I just think that they're going to take Buckner, and I'm going to laugh when they end up taking Ronnie Stanley, which is the big talk right now.
Like, over Tunsil.
Come on. Which is just dumb.
Come on. But,
you know, I just
especially when they've got Fluker and Dunlap. It's like, come on, guys.
Those are, yeah, and that, you know, that's something that Justice has talked about on our podcast quite a bit, is that it doesn't make sense for them to draft any left tackle or any offensive tackle for that matter, because they have you know, put so it'd be like the Cardinals drafting a tackle if they had a top five pick. Like, sure, Tunsil is probably going to be better than, or I shouldn't say probably. I would bet on Tunsil over DJ Humphries, and that's not a shot at DJ Humphries. That's just how much I think of Tunsil. But you just, like, from a capital standpoint, you can't invest that much into one position.
Yeah, you can't have that money wrapped up in a position for a guy that's not going to play at all.
Yeah, so I think Buckner makes sense because he helps on a down by down basis, because he is a guy that can play against the run and the pass, whereas Ramsey is going to be, you know, more of a back end type help. But if you're going just strictly BPA, I think Ramsey's probably the best player in the draft, followed closely by the guy I have going fourth.
All right, so take it. What, number four to the Dallas Cowboys, who's your pick?
You have them going with one Ohio State Buckeye, Mr. Joey Bosa, which, by the way, I think is an excellent pick. Like, I think it fits a huge need, but it also is one of those situations where it's also, you know, maybe number two or three on the best player available chart. And I have them going Ezekiel Elliott. And the more I think about this, because the way our mock fell, and we'll get to it, you know, through the whole thing, but just to, you know, a little foreshadowing here, I like your idea better of going Bosa, just the way our mock fell, because then they can come back in the second round, and neither of us had Derrick Henry going in the first round. So I would rather go Bosa Henry if I'm the Cowboys than Ezekiel Elliott, who I have going there, and like a Emmanuel Ogba or Shalik Calhoun. That's just me, though. You know,
well, my logic was this. I think that Elliott is the better, like, if I were to say what should they do, I think they should take Elliott because they really missed that. And if you're looking at the offense, they've got a ready-made, keep Tony Romo healthy. They really missed DeMarco Murray, so hand the ball off to Ezekiel Elliott. He can do a whole lot of things. However, they have to take a pass rusher with Randy Gregory suspended and now DeMarcus Lawrence suspended. They have to do something there, and Joey Bosa is and the irony of it all, although a lower key, that they would be selecting another player who has a little bit of off the field stuff going on.
Yep.
That Dallas is, I guess, is a lightning rod for that.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, like I said, I have Ramsey as like the best player in the draft and Zeke is the second best player in the draft. Like, I just think that highly of both those guys this year. You know, I'm big on like sliding scale comps for players, and like a sliding scale comp for Jalen Ramsey is like the best case scenario. He's, you know, the next Charles Woodson. Worst case scenario, I think he's Malcolm Jenkins, who I believe made a Pro Bowl before. So that's how much I think of Jalen Ramsey. I don't even know if you can compare Ezekiel Elliott to anybody. My comparison was actually like a bigger, more like compact and even athletic version of LeSean McCoy, but because he does those crazy things, you know, in and out of cuts and making people miss in the backfield. And so I think that's what, you know, that's his, you know, high end is maybe a rich man's LeSean McCoy, which is saying a lot because McCoy in Philly was a special player. So that's just, you know, that's just my take on the whole situation. We move to Jacksonville next, and you had an interesting pick here, and I think one that's certainly in play, but I also want to talk about chance of them trading this pick. So go ahead and give us your pick.
And in terms of trades, so you guys are listening, we didn't do any trades. For me, I don't mock any. I literally do one mock draft a year, and this is the one that's for the show. It's way too hard for me to even try to predict trades. So I picked Miles Jack. We know Seth is on the Miles Jack is way overrated hype train, and that's it's meant with all the respect in the world to Miles Jack, who we believe will be a very, very good player. But when the cops are saying a faster Ray Lewis, as he's talked about in his other podcast, it's ridiculous. Now, that said, everyone who's related to draft stuff, media, even a little bit, everyone loves him and says he's a shoo-in great player. Look at the Jacksonville Jaguars defense that they put out there. Miles Jack would be a great fit there and brings the potential, like what Bobby Wagner is able to do in Seattle plus. And so I love the fit there as long as he can stay healthy.
Yeah, and I'm completely 100% on board with you there. And I think that this is his ceiling. You know, people I've talked to like to say that this is the highest he'll go, but they don't think he'll go here because of the injury concerns, like you said. But I do think it'd be a great fit because I think, like you said, like he fits that Bobby Wagner role in the Jaguars defense that they're missing so badly. So I think it's a good fit. I think it's an excellent, you know, choice there. The interesting thing here is going to be watching, and I want to make sure I get the names right on the teams, watching Tennessee, San Francisco, and maybe a sleeper team like the New York Giants or New Orleans Saints, who have been talked about as maybe wanting a quarterback. And everybody trying to get in front of San Francisco. So this 5-6 region, if people really believe that Paxton Lynch is in play at 7, and San Francisco has not done a good job of making it sound like he is in play, so, you know, it may not work, but Cleveland's done an excellent job of making it sound like Paxton Lynch is in play at 8. But this is the place where a team like Jacksonville will look to move down because they allegedly love Leonard Floyd in the same role that Miles Jack would play in this defense. So you could get, you know, a team that's willing to move up and get Paxton Lynch. Maybe you move down to 8 or 10 or 12 and you're able to pick up Leonard Floyd and a second or third round pick.
And you took Jalen Ramsey. Now, granted, he was off the board for me. I think Jalen Ramsey is a great selection anywhere because you can never go wrong with that type, that talent.
No, you can't. I think he's an elite talent. And like I said, I think he's the best player in the draft. So, and, you know, that takes us to Baltimore, which is an interesting one. And we both went premier positions. But we went, you know, different sides of the ball. I went Joey Bosa here, and it just seems like a Baltimore pick, right, to get the guy that ends up being the, you know, 8 to 12 sack a year guy and makes a bunch of Pro Bowls and you know, is really good. But you picked maybe my third best player in this draft.
And that was Laremy Tunsil. Now, obviously, Bosa was off the board for my draft, and so – while you might want to, they might want to think of the pass rush, especially with Terrell Suggs having to come back from really kind of another injury that you don't want to worry about. He's getting older at this point. He's not going to be the same player he was. But you still got Joe Flacco. You need to protect him. And for however much longer that you're going to have Joe Flacco, you need a premier left tackle. And Tunsil's the guy. He's, you know, he's the best player on the board right now for me.
And he is for me as well, because he's still on the board. But I just, I don't know. You brought up Terrell Suggs. It makes sense. And, you know, he kind of fits what they like to do from their outside linebacker position and bigger body. You know, the Cardinals kind of, you know, mimic them in what they like in a player in terms of size, speed, you know, physicality outside. That takes us to the Cardinals' nemesis, the San Francisco 49ers. And you pick a good player, and I pick a really interesting player. I won't say bad. You know, a guy that I don't think is worth the 7th overall pick, but is getting a lot of talk there. So who'd you take to pair up with the one and only who did they pick last year? I can't remember his name now.
Eric Armstead.
Eric Armstead, thank you.
Eric Armstead, and I have them going with another basically bringing his teammate up and kind of building a young defensive front, potentially to set them up for years to come as they've done defensively, become very physical up front. I have them take it to Forrest Buckner. That's a very San Francisco pick, especially if they want to get back to San Francisco sort of football, be physical up front. They've got Eric Armstead with a lot of potential. You got DeForest Buckner. That's a really good place to start. You go a different place, and I like the concept because personally on my board, if I think what the 49ers should do, because Elliott is still on my board, I think they should take him. If you look at the division, even with Carlos Hyde, that would make potentially with a division full of, assuming Thomas Rawls returns healthy, if he can come back healthy, then you've got a division full of just dynamic running backs. And kind of, but every team this time with David Johnson, and then you add Ezekiel Elliott and Todd Gurley, and then Thomas Rawls, and then you've got yourself a division of smash mouth great running football. But I go with Buckner instead because I like what they add to that defense. They need it badly, and you go to a position they do actually need.
Yeah, and it's just kind of the Chip Kelly mold thing, right? Like, that's what I think it ends up being. And that's they take Jack Conklin out of Michigan State. I'm not a Jack Conklin fan at number 7. I'm a Jack Conklin fan at the bottom of round 1, end of round, or into round 2. As like a Joel Batonio type player. But, but yeah, I think Conklin is he's been talked about there quite a bit. I don't understand him at all.
And I like a tackle. This is where I thought about, you know, if I had to pick what they should do, that's where Ronnie Stanley comes in. You know, I kind of like that, the idea of Ronnie Stanley in that situation, because I think they should go Elliott or tackle before they go elsewhere. So let's go to number 8. This is the Cleveland pick. Neither one of us has them taking Paxton Lynch. And this is where I have them take. And I have them taking, I have them going offense. You know, I really bought into the notion that maybe with their analytics focus, that maybe at quarterback, that's not the best use of their capital, since they already have Josh McCown and they already have RG3, that they kind of can roll with RG3 at least for a year, do the whole reclamation project, and then they bring in Ezekiel Elliott as a weapon to use, kind of pairing Griffin up with a great running back, kind of how he had his rookie year in Washington, with the production that he had behind him at that running back. Now, what do I think they should do if they're going to go that route? I still think they need to go wide receiver. Probably, if I were picking, I would think I'd probably jump on Laquon Treadwell or maybe Josh Doxton, one of those players there. I think that's what they should do. But you go another position that I think is really smart for them as well.
Yeah, I have them taking Laramie Tunsil there, and I think they would run to the proverbial podium to get the card in to take Laramie Tunsil. I don't understand the Paxton Lynch thing. We've talked about it ad nauseum on the podcast. I think RG3 is here for a one-year extended tryout to find out if he is a franchise quarterback, and if he's not, then, you know, they'll have a high pick next year. And so they'll get the guy. You know, you don't trade down from the second position to draft a quarterback, right? Like you stay there and you take the best quarterback because you don't worry if Paxton Lynch falls past San Francisco or anything like that. Yeah, they may get away with it. Maybe Lynch is there, but it doesn't make sense to me from that point of view. So I have them taking Laramie Tunsil. We've talked about it a lot, though. I love the idea of Zeke there. I love the idea of just loading up on offense and giving Hugh Jackson and RG3 a chance to turn things around there and maybe have a good offense. But in the same vein, I think Laramie Tunsil helps out similarly.
Well, that and you know, Joe Thomas is getting older. Let's look at Tampa Bay at number 9. We go a couple different directions. This is where you get one of your favorite pass rushers comes off the board for Tampa Bay. You take, who'd you take?
I take Shaq Lawson. I think they need a pass rusher. allegedly the recheck on the shoulder went well. I think it just makes too much sense.
And I took the cornerback Hargreaves, who fills an incredibly big need in Tampa Bay's defense as well. And I think, you know, from what I've read, I do secondhand scouting. I read scouting reports, but Hargreaves is the guy who, if you're going to pick a cornerback, he's the guy that they would want.
Yeah, and you know, the Joe Hayden comps are apt. He's maybe not an elite shutdown corner, but he's that next tier of corner where he's a guy that could be a perennial Pro Bowler, you know, second, third team All Pro type guy that really helps out a defense that's kind of trying to find its way right now. And I think Lawson, I think anything on that defense is helpful. Honestly, like, I don't think you can go wrong there. I don't think a Miles Jack would be bad. You know, I still have him on the board, I believe. Yeah. Miles Jack wouldn't be bad. Even like a Darren Lee wouldn't be bad, even though they kind of have Darren Lee in Lavonte David. Just getting athletes and playmakers on the defense would be super helpful for them right now. And then you have Lawson going right next with the New York Giants, right?
Yes, I do. He's the guy. Well, obviously, after Joey Bosa, to me, he's the pass rusher that makes sense. And the Giants, I guess, just want to stack up on pass rushers. They got Olivier Vernon. They brought back Jason Pierre-Paul. And now, granted, he's on a 1-year deal. So you need someone moving forward. And back to their Super Bowl days, how'd they do it? With an elite pass rush. And so they can bring Lawson, a very athletic guy, pair him, you know, kind of mix him, match him. What I think they should do, and neither one of us picked it, I think actually Noah Spence would be a perfect pick for them right there. But he's going to go much later in our first round, as we both find out.
Yeah, and I like the idea of Lawson there. And like you said, I think Spence would be a good fit. I went off-ball linebacker, though, because their linebackers are old and injured and just not very good. I really wanted to put Miles Jack here. I did. And this, you know, everybody, you know, because I joke around a lot about Miles Jack and stuff, labels me the Miles Jack hater. And I'm really not. Like, I think he'd be great in Jacksonville. I think he's going to be good in specific situations. But can New York really afford, you know, to take another linebacker with knee issues, you know, or have another injury-prone linebacker? They just had John Beeson. Like, is that the best thing for them? So I think they're going to go Leonard Floyd and kind of get that athletic off-ball linebacker and try to make him the next Anthony Barr.
And I like the pick, and especially kind of if I'm looking at Leonard Floyd as a player, I love him in a 4-3 set, because one of the things that I'm reading a lot is that as a pass rusher, he has great explosiveness and great bend, but he's too small to play as a down lineman, and he's really, in most systems, going to be too small to play as a 3-4 outside linebacker. So you kind of put him in the same position as a Bruce Irvin type player. And I like the versatility because he does have off the ball skills, but he also does have potentially elite explosiveness and bend off the edge so that you can bring him down on passing downs, which back in their speed rush that they would do back in their Super Bowl days against the Patriots, that also is a great fit.
I agree. And I think that's, you know, I think that's what they're trying to do. And so he gives them that NASCAR package, and he can do some things, you know, with his rushing the passer as well. You know, it's not his best look, but it's something he can do consistently well. And that takes us to Chicago. And honestly, I think both of us were trying to find the right defensive fit for Chicago. I went Vernon Hargreaves here, and I just did that simply because the idea of he's the best, you know, best cornerback available at this time.
And I surprised you with my pick. I went with the defensive line, the defensive tackle, Andrew Billings. I could have gone with a number of defensive linemen here, especially now Billings for some isn't as great a pick, especially since they already have an Eddie Goldman. Eddie Goldman also had an injury late last season, a pretty bad ankle injury that shut him down. But when you add big physical bodies in there, Billings does his job well, you know, with Chicago playing a solid 3-4 now, having even a rotation of nose tackles would not be a bad idea for a team that needs to get better defensively. I glance at the offensive line. I took a sniff at it, but then realized, hey, they've already addressed their offensive line quite a bit this offseason. So we want to put defensive studs out there for Chicago.
Yeah, and I think both of us thought about Noah Spence here. I think Shaq Lawson would be a great fit if he fell. Leonard Floyd for you would be another good fit, but I had him off the board. But these are all names that you can watch and look at. Jerron Reed is another one that I've heard mentioned, even in A'shaun Robinson, I should say, even this high, because of, you know, Billings, Reed, and Robinson can play all three positions in a 3-4 defensive front. And that's, you know, that's what the their kind of appeal is to teams. You know who would be a good fit here, though? Jihad Ward. Get him off the board early.
Yeah, please.
Know, get him off the board early and let him be another team's problem. No, I'm kidding.
For those of you who are listening, that's sort of a joke that's going around between the two of us, is because of Peter King's dark horse, and he put us together his one mock draft. He says the Cardinals take Ryan Kelly to center. That's the boring pick everyone's mocking. But then he says, you know, Jihad Ward out of Illinois is a dark horse pick. And, he's not very versatile. He's not elitely athletic. And he did not produce in college. So he would make a perfect fit for the Cardinals, naturally. So yeah. We would want him off the board. So yeah, exactly. Don't pick Jihad Ward. But that brings us to number 12. We go to the Saints. And I actually I love the pick that you make. Thinking for the Saints moving forward, I go with defensive line. I go with the next big guy off the board, and I take off A'shaun Robinson, New Orleans. Defensively, they just continue to be a mess. They need to build from the middle out. But you go and make a nice pick of?
Yeah, Paxton Lynch. So there's a rumor floating out there that they tried to trade up. They were one of the teams in the bidding market to get up to one or two. I don't remember which one it was, but that was the hot rumor. So maybe they like Paxton Lynch enough to pull the trigger here. This is, you know, me just reading tea leaves type thing. But
And it makes sense, because if you look at the salary cap situation, Drew Brees enters the final year of his contract. He's got a $30 million cap hit this year. He's old, too, and you can tell by, in terms of production, he is declining in some aspects. They need to move on, and they just signed Sean Payton to a long-term extension. So the whole idea behind Sean Payton coming back was so that you get to give him a chance to work on life after Drew Brees. What would be a more perfect situation than to bring in a quarterback like Paxton Lynch? Now, I don't love Paxton Lynch. I have a lot of doubts about him, especially when I think, well, who's – if I look at the body type and the type of thing that he did in college, and I see Brock Osweiler, and even as much of an ASU guy as I am to this day, and even entering the draft, I had doubts about what type of quarterback Brock Osweiler was going to be in the pros. So I see Paxton Lynch and see a top 15 pick for Brock Osweiler. I don't know.
Well, he just did get like $900 million. So
he did. So good job. I mean, great job, Brock, but
yeah, I'm jealous, but yeah, so that's my thought. I love the pick of A'shaun Robinson there for them because they need help. You know, Spence is another one that's on the board still for both of us. You know, for you, Leonard Floyd, Miles Jack for me even makes sense. Like Stephon Anthony and Miles Jack, whoo, that's an athletic duo at inside linebacker. That's like potential Dansby in Washington for them if Jack can stay healthy. And, you know, Stephon Anthony is just going to continue to be great. That moves us to Miami, and we both had the same guy here. Boring. Ronnie Stanley. Yep.
Ronnie Stanley.
And apparently he could go early. You know, we've talked about it on the podcast quite a bit. We're not Stanley guys. We don't understand the huge love for him because he's a limited athlete. but he does have good technique. He is a solid player, so it makes sense. And Miami just needs to build around and for Ryan Tannehill if they're gonna, if this is gonna be his year he breaks out, which is every year, but if this is gonna be the year he breaks out.
So we go to the Raiders, pick number 14. We go opposite sides of the ball. I say, well, I like what they already have on defense, and so I look on offensive line since it's a position they need to look at. Stanley's off the board, Tunsil's off the board. I pull the trigger on Conklin. He's a guy I think that will be steady, but you want to protect Derek Carr, and if you're going to do it, he's the best. In my opinion, he's the best tackle on the board right now, and that probably should be a priority because they already have they've got the receiver to throw to. They've got pass rushers galore. They have a really physical defense. Let's protect Derek Carr.
Yeah, and I like Conklin in this area. Like I said, I prefer him even lower, like a New York area, but it makes sense, and he's a mauler. He really would fit in on that Oakland offensive line. And like you said, protecting Derek Carr is numero uno. I went on the other side, but same type of idea in the trenches, and went with Sheldon Rankins. I went with Rankins because Mario Edwards Jr. Has a neck injury, if I remember right. Similar to Peyton Manning's, if I remember everything I read right. And so there's questions on if he's even going to be healthy enough to play again. So, I'm not a huge Rankins guy, but I see the fit in that type of attacking Jack Del Rio defense. I think he could play in the who's the guy that just got paid from Denver to Jacksonville? Malik Jackson role type of thing for Oakland.
At 15, we go Tennessee. Seth makes actually, it's a pick, everyone thought that it was going to be Laremy Tunsil at the top of the draft. I sit here at number 15 and I see Noah Spence on the board, and I'm going to throw caution to the wind. Yes, we've got Marcus Mariota. Yes, we need to protect Mariota. We've got Taylor Lewan, but we also have a defense that needs some work. And what helps that defense is a pass rush. And they do have, they've got Brian Arakpo, they got Derek Morgan, but after that, need some help. And so here we've got a great Dick LeBeau defense. Let's add a pass rusher to it. And Noah Spence is on the board. I'm taking Noah Spence and I'm throwing caution to the wind and hoping I can pick up a lineman down the line.
And I like that for them. I like Spence there. I just went on the offensive line because he's probably one of my favorite. I put him on the, kind of that list I made out today about guys I really like. And Taylor Decker, he's just a nasty dude, mean guy. Kind of reminds me of John Runyon out of Philadelphia all those years ago. Just a really physical throwback lineman. I think he can go play the right side. The kid they drafted out of Michigan last year, his name's escaping me. He's going to be the left tackle, Taylor Lewan, the left tackle. And all of a sudden you've got a lot of, talent on the board and maybe they're ready to make the next step. Probably not because Mike Mularkey is still their head coach, but getting closer. And then, go to 16 and we both go with the same position, just different players. And I think you can make an argument for both. And you had who?
Sheldon Rankins.
To the Detroit Lions. And I went Robert Kimdiche. So I think we're both on the same wavelength. You went with the safer, to speak, player.
They already have gone through Ndamukong Suh, so.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. You get a lot of the same vibe about personality and just, again, they're weird. He's a weird guy type thing with Robert Kimdiche, but I think he delivers for that team. Now I will say this: my buddy Jeff Risden, who's done a lot of spots with us on the podcast, great Lions follow. If you want to get to know other teams, I recommend guys on draft day. Jeff Rose doing great for the Lions. He thinks it's going to be Jerron Reed, if I remember correctly. That's his take. So, you know, neither of us have gone Jerron Reed. Both of us went our own direction. But basically all interior defensive linemen.
Reed, which they badly need because that Detroit defensive line, which was so good with Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley, and then they let them all go, and then they became terrible.
Yeah, so just, you know, I think we're all on the same page. We just picked different stylistic type players and guys that we liked. That takes us to the Atlanta Falcons, and we basically, again, same position, different names. I had Miles Jack finally coming off the board here. I think it fits what Atlanta wants to do on defense. Dan Quinn, you know, it's similar to what you did with Jacksonville and Miles Jack, and you had...
I went kind of the same idea, only with Leonard Floyd.
Yeah, and so I think it's the perfect fit. Either of those guys work there. I think the other name we need to mention is Darren Lee. So I think those are the three guys that are going to be in play if they do decide to go off the ball linebacker. My buddy Charles McDonald, who writes for Falconholic, or however you pronounce it, the Atlanta Falcons.
The Falcoholic.
Falcoholic. The SB Nation website, he has them potentially taking Shaq Lawson if he falls. He thinks a safety could be in play, although he doesn't know if one's really worth that pick at 17. But, yeah, he ranked them Jack, Floyd, Lawson, and then, you know, who cares, you know, as long as it's a good player. But if you're combining fit, need, you know, all that good stuff, that's who they like.
Now we've gone through 17 of the 31 picks, so that wraps up basically the first half, a little more than the first half of the draft. Next up on Revenge of the Birds Radio is the rest of the first round. Now we're back on Revenge of the Birds Radio. We're going to with the Indianapolis Colts at pick number 18. And I went a direction that would be a very Colts thing to do. And I think it's too, you know, the past couple of years, they've been really hit hard with Andrew Luck and his protection. Andrew Luck getting hurt this last year. And so while the logical thing to do would be to say, hey, they need an offensive lineman, Andrew Luck also didn't have, you know, they've got T.Y. Hilton, but they thought they had something on Andre Johnson. It was terrible. So I'm giving him a weapon in Laquon Treadwell. And you are going with the safer pick.
Yeah, and not even a safer pick. I think that's a good pick because it gives them something different. They have, you know, now all of a sudden they have, I can't remember the guy's name. They have T.Y. Hilton, and then they have the pick they just made, Dante Moncrief, who's kind of the Floyd in that offense, the big 50-50 ball guy, and then you just throw in there Treadwell in the Fitzgerald role, and all of a sudden Andrew Luck's got a ton of weapons. I just went with another Andrew Luck type thing, and then I took Ryan Kelly. I'm going to say this right now, and, you know, if I'm wrong, go ahead and tweet me or say something on Revenge of the Birds. But Ryan Kelly is not getting to the Arizona Cardinals. So,
I agree. He's not.
The pipe dream can end now, Cardinals fans. It's not happening. I won't be surprised if he goes like 15 to Tennessee, to be completely honest with you. Like, that's how much the NFL really likes him. So,
But in this case, so Kelly's off the board at number 18. I will let you know that in my mock and the rest of you're going to see Kelly's falling. He's going to fall further than you probably expect, but he still doesn't get to the Cardinals. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. And so then Buffalo, we both go defense. Troubled, allegedly.
Matches up with Rex Ryan.
Exactly. And so I think your pick makes more sense than my pick. And I took Noah Spence. And the reason I don't know if Noah Spence makes sense is because he's a little small to play outside linebacker for Rex Ryan. He's kind of, you know, Ryan and the Cardinals have kind of developed this idea that we need these bigger guys, and, you know, that
because they have to defend the run. They have to set the edge.
So we need these bigger guys, and we'll manufacture pass rushing. And you went similar to what their thought was with Sheldon Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson.
They need Robert Kendici. That's what they need. And, you know, Rex Ryan will be able to put up with any sort of eccentricities that he's got. But that would be a force inside. Kambichi is actually, if I had a player that I wish could make it to the Cardinals, he's that guy. I see him and I see not just the type of player on the field. I see Darnell Dockett. I see Darnell Dockett and his personality. And we've already seen what Darnell Dockett and Calais Campbell can do. I want to see what Darnell Dockett and what I would love to see Kambichi in Arizona paired up with Rodney Gunter for years to come. So good job, Buffalo. You got yourself a great guy. And I'm going to be sad when they play in week three in Buffalo against Kambichi.
And I've got the New York Jets next, and we both have the same player.
Boring.
And I think for me, I think this gets them closer to the playoffs. Well, we both have them taking Connor Cook, a quarterback out of Michigan State. I think he can step in and kind of fill the same role that Ryan Fitzpatrick had.
Yeah, he's at least as good as Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has had himself a nice career in the NFL, he's limited. He doesn't have much of a ceiling. He's steady, but he's still not back. So Connor Cook gives in. I've liked the player comps. You compare him to a Carson Palmer. The comp I saw today was Eli Manning, and Eli Manning and Carson Palmer, kind of the same guy in terms of skill set and, you know, decision making on the field. So yes, I like that pick for them. And yeah, I'm too bad that he couldn't fall to the Cardinals, you know, say in the third round, but that's never going to happen. But Connor Cook would be a great successor to Carson Palmer too.
Yeah, I agree. And that takes us to your off the wall pick.
Yes.
I'll go first. So you can lead up to yours. I have them taking Laquon Treadwell, get more weapons for Kirk Cousins, who they're going to pay $900 billion to this year because they franchised him.
And this is where I'm going. Remember, this is a Washington team who traded everyone for Robert Griffin and then at the same time drafted Kirk Cousins. It would be easy for me, especially, Ryan Kelly here to the Redskins makes a lot of sense as well. However, they don't have a long-term deal with Kirk Cousins, and it didn't sound like they wanted to pay him the money that starting quarterbacks get. So, and this is where I go. I could see the Redskins going here, and this is off the wall. They're going to draft a quarterback, take Christian Hackenberg, and basically say to Kirk Cousins, all right, you might have done it last year. I don't know if you're going to be able to put that same part together, and we've already got your guy to replace you. So, hello, Robert Griffin returned. You've kind of we're sending you to the door.
Yeah, and I like your thought process. Connor Cook's off the board. Teams are insane, and
and it's a Redskins pick. Come on, they're going to do something crazy.
And they've already been linked, or the Bills have been linked to Christian Hackenberg, you know, two picks earlier. So let's not act like it's out of the realm of possibility that he goes in round one. Hell, the Cardinals have been linked to him in round one. So, but I'd take him over Jihad Ward. Anyways, so we both go back to back, and we start, you know, you started the run on wide receivers at 18, and then we go back to back Houston Texans. We both have them taking Will Fuller and
Speed.
Yes, and the Minnesota Vikings, we both have them taking Josh Doctson.
And they need someone because they don't have the receiver threat in Minnesota, and they need something for Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, and I think Treadwell's the best fit there because I think he does what Teddy needs the best. That's just me. But Doctson is a close second, and I have no problem with that pick there. Mike Thomas from Ohio State makes sense as well. And then Will Fuller, what he does is he opens up things underneath for DeAndre Hopkins and allows for them to do a little more, you know, the Houston Texans to do a little bit more offensively. And he's the deep threat for Mr. Brock Osweiler, who has a nice deep ball arm. He may be, you know, maybe not pushing the ball vertical a ton, but the ability to get Will Fuller deep once to twice a game.
He did it against the Cardinals in the preseason. So
yeah, and in a DeSean Jackson type role. So I think that's where he fits, and that's what, you know, he would do best. So that's why I think we both have Will Fuller there.
So we go Fuller, both go Fuller, go Doctson. Now Cincinnati, I really almost went with the same pick. You go receiver with Corey Coleman.
Yep.
So I go pass rush. I go Emmanuel Ogba.
And he makes sense for them from a player's perspective because they like those bigger athletic guys. You know, they took Marcus Hunt. They took Michael Johnson. There was another guy that they took that's escaping me right now. So that's, you know, that's their prototype, and I like that pick from you for them. I just went Corey Coleman because they have to replace a lot with Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones both being gone. I think they want Josh Doctson, and I think they would take Michael Thomas, but I think they take Corey Coleman because he gives them a little bit of Marvin Jones and a little bit of Mohamed Sanu, and then that allows them to do a little more.
Oh, the Steelers. Sorry, Cardinals fans. The player that many Cardinals fans want for Arizona is going to Pittsburgh. We both have the Steelers, who are absolutely dreadful in the secondary, taking William Jackson III, a guy that many Cardinals fans would like to see land in Arizona because he's got that size-speed combo.
Yeah, and I think that they're always a mystery because – they do things to the beat of their own drum and their own way. And so I'm interested to see, honestly, which way they go in this. I'm interested to see how this goes. I think they take a corner finally in William Jackson III, but it wouldn't shock me to see them take a guy like Chris Jones or, you know, if a Kim Dichie falls, maybe they take a Darren Lee, who's both on our board. You know, I think it gives them a lot of options there. So, and that takes us to Seattle and two more players that I think Cardinals fans are interested in. I'll go first because I think he's the lesser interested, and that's Darren Lee. It's just he's that athlete, he's that playmaker, and it just seems like a Seattle pick because they just tend to draft good defensive players and maybe not great offensive players. And so it makes sense that they would draft another good defensive player.
And Darren Lee was on my radar for Seattle, but with Ryan Kelly still on the board, I couldn't turn down. Now, Seattle doesn't have a history of using prime draft capital on the offensive line. Well, they did it. Okay, that's not true. They did a few years back. But after trading Max Unger away for the tight end guy, Jimmy Graham, they really notice a difference. And so they need to protect Ryan. They got to protect Russell Wilson. So Ryan Kelly finally comes off the board. Sorry, Cardinals fans. And so I go Kelly because he's still there, as opposed to Darren Lee, who is also a really good pick for Seattle.
And that takes us to the Green Bay Packers, I believe. I got to make sure.
Yes, number 27, okay. Green Bay.
Yeah, my phone just went black. So, Green Bay Packers. I talked to Justice last night after the show was over. I said, give me a name the Packers are going to pick. And he said, is Kenny Clark still on the board? I said, yes. He goes, that's the pick. So I cheated. Sorry.
I go to the same idea with Jerron Reed.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the only difference is Clark's more of an upfield player than Reed. But again, same type of thing as we did with
Detroit.
Detroit, yeah. You know, different types of players, but filling the same positional need. From there, Kansas City. I don't know why they go cornerback again, but it seems like that's what everybody says, which means they're not going to go cornerback, right? Like, everybody's saying that they're going to take a corner, so they're not.
They should take a receiver. They really should.
Yeah, so it's – but we have them both we both have them taking Eli Apple. Again, another player that Cardinals fans are interested in. I think the Cardinals are legitimately interested in him because he matches up with that size – speed
and skill set because he does press really well. I like him above the cornerbacks on the board. He's actually my favorite. He's my favorite of what the Cardinals do.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. I think that makes a ton of sense.
Ooh, this is our favorite pick. It's the Cardinals pick. We go two very different directions. This is where this is a guy that, you know, went, because he was still on the board, I had to jump on it. And now some of you might have caught Josh Weinfuss on ESPN. He goes with the same position, but he goes with Deion Jones. Now, we like how he fits in Arizona. That seems a bit way high in the first round. However, Darren Lee is still on the board. And while inside linebacker is not a position necessarily of need, I love this pick here because Kevin Minter's got a year left on his deal. And that would be a great pairing because he's a little bit bigger. He's bigger than Jones. So he can hold up a little bit better. Darren Lee with Deion Buchanan on the inside. We've got Washington Dansby again.
Yeah, I like that. That's the potential that those guys have. I'm a big Darren Lee fan. Other people are not. I don't care. Like,
and
I'm
I don't expect him. Like, that's the thing. When I was going through the board, I was like, wait, Lee fell. I never expected him to make it to 29.
Yeah, and so I would have been, and he's there on my board too. I just think there's been a lot of talk, a lot of, you know, information being passed around, and the guy I picked fits what they like.
Checks off all the boxes.
Checks off every box. Captain, senior, played everywhere on the offensive line, and now is getting talk as a center. Cody Whitehair from Kansas State. This is going to be my official pick for the Arizona Cardinals, so I'm done. You know, I might drop a, oh, this is who I hear they're going to take, but this is my official guess of who they're going to take in
Preston Smith was my guy last year. Cody Whitehair was one of three guys. There was Lee, there was Chris Jones, and there was Cody Whitehair. And I really, really kind of bounced around. Jones, I really like. Whitehair checks off every box. I leaned against Whitehair simply because all the draft capital that they've used on offensive line, and maybe they just flinch at that a little bit. And they've already kind of, like, the versatile guard center, I think they see possibility of value later in the draft. And I had Jones on my board. I had Whitehair right there, but in the end, Lee was higher. I didn't expect Lee to be there, so I took him.
No, yep, and I think that's a great pick. I have Lee going next to Carolina, so, you know, I'm crazy. But I think Thomas Davis has got to be done eventually. Like, he's the bionic man by now. I think getting a replacement for him in place, similar to what the Cardinals are looking to do, you know, if they take a Darren Lee, just to a lesser scale, because, you know, they don't have a guy as good as.
Well, sure they do. It's Deion Buchanan.
He's just, maybe he gets there. He's just not there quite yet. But, you know, but he replaces Minter. Same scenario. And we talked about that at the beginning. The Cardinals are in a good position. They're in a similar position to the Carolina Panthers where, you know, you can say, oh, the Panthers need a wide receiver. You'll talk about that shortly. But, you know, they can also draft for 2017 and 18 and 19 with this pick. So I just like the availability of Darren Lee there.
And me, you know, if I'm thinking what they need, they really need a cornerback. Now that they don't have Josh Norman, they need a cornerback. But the cornerbacks on the board, the top guy on the board that I see right now, I mean, you go Mackenzie Alexander. He's too little. He's too little. Then you go Kendall Fuller. Could you draft in the first round? Maybe. But then I go, well, if you got a franchise quarterback in Cam Newton, look at what they did last year. And they had nobody receiver. They had Ted Gettett receiver. So they get back. You get back Kelvin Benjamin, and now this is where Corey Coleman comes off the board, and now you've got a couple of legitimate, and now you can make Ted Ginn your third receiver instead of a number one, and that really opens things up offensively for them.
And it also gives them time to continue to develop Devin Funchess, who they took in the second or third round last year, and really surround Cam with a lot of weapons. Because it could go from Cam show to now this offense is stacked from top to bottom. And so it's a really fun offense to watch. I think you're in the right place with who you picked and the idea of them needing a corner as well. And then the last pick, because the Patriots are cheaters, apparently. I have them replacing Malik Jackson and Chris Jones, who is one of my favorite players in this draft.
And I go, Paxton Lynch fell far enough. Somehow Denver gets their quarterback in Paxton Lynch. And so whether he starts day one or whether he waits a year behind Mark Sanchez or takes over for Sanchez because he's terrible, Paxton Lynch finally comes off the board. He is the quarterback. For me, he's the quarterback that falls in this draft. But he finally comes off the board at the end of the first round. Denver locks him up, and they still have the ability to have that fifth-year option on him down the line, which they did not have with Brock Osweiler.
And I like the pick. I, you know, would have taken him or Connor Cook if they were still on the board. So
I have five quarterbacks coming off the board. The reason why I put that kind of logically, Christian Hackenberg I had in the first round, I was going with the John Gruden approach. He said, I would be shocked if Christian Hackenberg isn't drafted in the first round. So I made sure he got drafted in the first round. Five quarterbacks come off the board for me. That's really the biggest surprise. I think both of our mocks are pretty viable, but, I mean, we did them. So, yeah. Well, of course, we think they're good.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think we went, like, crazy outside of Hackenberg and, you know, maybe – like Ryan Kelly or at 18 or something like that. But I thought we were both realistic. Oh, sorry. I did have Paxton Lynch at. So I think both of those are, but quarterbacks are always so hard to predict. You never know who's going to take one. Two positions, and that's who they take. So I think that's the way you figure it out and learn about, you know, where those guys go. But overall, I think it's going to be a fun draft. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm kind of semi glad that the draft season's over though, because it's just getting to the point where we're trying to create content by using hyperbole to get our takes off and be noticed. And instead of just, you know, having fun with it, like we try to do on the Draft Breakdown podcast, we get a lot of interesting takes in order to get noticed. And you know what? It makes for good fodder on our podcast, and we appreciate everybody that's listened throughout the season. But it also, you know, allows, you know, people to make fun of everybody, which is the best part of the draft season, to be honest.
And let's see. You know, Mark Dalton made sure he's the VP of media relations for the Arizona Cardinals. He likes mocking mock drafts, not like projecting mock drafts, but mocking mock drafts, making fun of them. As he, you know, for all the mock drafts that are out there, He makes it a point to point out that, you know how many people got the 29th pick right last year? Diddly squat. So, who knows? But anyhow, that wraps up our yearly mock draft, our Revenge of the Birds radio mock draft. Hopefully you're listening to this before the draft, or if you're listening to it after the draft, you can have a good laugh of how things turned out. We will be back next week to react to the Cardinals draft. Will there be a surprise? Will they have traded back? Will Michael Floyd still be a Cardinal? Those are the type of things we're going to be able to talk about next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roop. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and we'll talk to you next week. Talk and draft. You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
So, Jose, how does it feel to no longer be the only one to have bagged all four major competitions?
What do you mean?
Well, the Premier League, UEFA Champions League, Emirates FA Cup and UEFA Europa League.
No, I'm still the only one.
Not anymore.
What is this you are talking about?
BT Sport has all four competitions this season, and it's easy to watch on BT TV, Sky TV and online.
Unbelievable.
Four competitions, one venue. BT Sport. BT Sport will show 42 Premier League matches, all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games, plus up to 24 Emirates FA Cup matches.